Hi, good vach. And this is a double parsha for some and a single parsha for others. That's right. We are at Parshat Chukat Balak, or just Parshat Balak, and this is Yisachar Wortel coming at you in 5783. I'm going to be talking about the parsha of Balak, which is also the parsha of Bilam, but we call it Balak, and that's a whole other discussion, because that one is for people in Eretz Yisrael as well as people in the U.S., but it is one of the few times in the U.S. or really anywhere outside of Eretz Yisrael that we do pair Chukas and Balak together. Relating to Balak, obviously, it's predominantly about the story of Balak and Bilam, and Bilam was hired as a prophet for his uncanny abilities, and the Sifri mentions, among many, many, many other sources that quote it, that in a certain sense, he was just as great as Moshe with respect to his ability to interact with Hashem. Now, actually, the dynamics and the purposes are obviously very different, and obviously he was not a great individual in terms of his positive attributes, but in terms of his ability to effectively talk with Hashem, was nearly on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, the comparisons and contrasts between Moshe and Bilam are the subject of a great length and debate, and certainly not going to do it justice to address it here. But what is clear is that Bilam was seemingly the greatest prophet that the non-Jewish people had ever had. And regardless of the extent to which Bilam was evil, one thing that's overlooked is the fact that the nations of the world didn't use Bilam in a capacity to get close to Hashem. Again, there's a lot of things we're going to be talking about, and they can be taken in a lot of different directions, but feel free to talk about it at the Shabbos table or anytime. Now, Balak uses Bilam to attempt to curse the Jewish people, and others utilized his services to get what they wanted, but unlike Moshe, they did not use Bilam to ascend or connect spiritually. In other words, even though Bilam was, you know, selfish and had other evil traits, right? People, whether it was Balak, whether it was anybody else of the non-Jews, they could have used him to get closer to God, to get closer to spirituality, but they didn't do that. They used him just for gains, right? You know, whether it was for defense or whatever it was, right? So Moshe was unique in that Hashem spoke to him panim al panim, face to face. And he may have actually communicated with Bilam in just as a direct manner as he did to Moshe, but it was not truly panim al panim, because that faith, so to speak, needs to in turn pass it along to another faith. In other words, the teachers teach the student, who then becomes a teacher for the next generation. Bilam didn't do this. Moshe did. Moshe had a disciple that he taught everything to. That was Yehoshua. He was right by Moshe's side whenever possible and strove to learn everything possible from him as he could. But when Israel lost the merit to be able to experience the full glory of Hashem, Moshe had to wear a masveh, a mask. This is after the Chet Egel. Because the spiritual glow of Hashem that radiated from Moshe was too much for the people to bear, but it was not too much for Yehoshua. This light was reflected into Yehoshua to some degree, and Chazal therefore compared Moshe to the sun and Yehoshua to the moon, because he was reflecting some of Moshe's quote-unquote light. And the transmission of this light was given to the people over the course of generations, and it can now begin, right? We say in you know, Pirkei Avos, Yeshua transmitted to the Zakenim, and Anshei Knesset Gedolah, all these different things, right, throughout generations, and Hillel, and Rava, and Abaye, and, you know, the Rishonim, and the Gaonim, and well, the other direction, Gaonim, Rishonim, and just throughout the generation, right? You have to have a face. So you, when you're teaching somebody, you make eye contact with them, you look at their face, right? A face is an expression. You want to see if they're understanding what you're saying. There's a concept of panim upon him that you want to actually transmit something. You're not just telling something over for the sake of telling things over. You want people to see it and observe it and understand it, right? And Yehoshua was, in a sense, panim al panim to Moshe, right? He might not have been panim al panim to Hashem, but he was panim al panim to Moshe, right? And this is important. And therefore, it's interesting that the gematria of Yehoshua is, in fact, equivalent to panim al panim, right? Because he took this to the perfect degree. He was able to take the light from Moshe, mirror it as best he could, and use it and then transmit it to the next generation. This connection is even hinted to in the Torah, where it states, "V'diber Hashem al Moshe panim al panim kasher yidaber ish areihu v'shavu mechana u'mesharta Yehoshua ben Nun na'ar lo yamish mitocho ho." Long pasuk, let me translate. And Hashem spoke to Moshe panim al panim, face to face, like a man would speak to his fellow, and he would return to the camp, and his disciple Yehoshua ben Nun would not move from the tent of meeting. Therefore, there's a smichus, there's a connection. In the same pasuk, talking about the concept of panim upanim, and also the concept of Moshe's disciple of Yeshua ben Nun. Bilam could have had a disciple, but he didn't. He didn't even have any followers. He was effectively a lone wolf. He did not have a Yeshua because no one wanted to be the Yeshua. nobody took advantage of the fact that Bilam could communicate so easily with Hashem, even though it certainly would have been very advantageous to do so. Well, Chazal meant by the fact that the non-Jews can't claim if we only had someone like Moshe Rabbeinu. Because even though Bilam might not have been righteous and may have actually been very wicked, they still could have used him. They still could have used him to get closer to God because of his abilities. And who knows what that would have even done for Bilam. I mean, there's all the kinds of possibilities, and it's so much of a larger talk. Bilam may not have been righteous. He may have been downright evil. It's not clear, right? There's a lot of talk about that. Certainly he wasn't humble like Moshe. But the non-Jews could have used Bilam for humble purposes or righteous purposes, but even if Bilam may have had ulterior motives. But they could have found divine truth, divine meaning. They could have found, like, a lot of important things, but they didn't. And therefore, Bilam is forced to acknowledge that there's something much more unique about the Jewish people, the followers of Moshe and Yeshua. Matovu halecha Yaakov, how goodly are your tents, Yaakov? Our sages teach that this line connotes modesty, and the use of the term Yaakov, rather than Yisrael, refers to the righteous and modest character of the Jewish women. But it also might be a remez or a hint to Yaakov, our forefather. For the only person with whom the Torah ever uses the term panim al panim, other than Moshe, is in fact Yaakov. The Torah states, Vayikra Yaakov, Shem Hamakom, Pini El, Kiraiti Elohim, Panim al Panim. It's very interesting. And Yaakov called the place Peniel because he said, I have seen Hashem panim al panim. Yaakov also took the light. He took the light from Avram and Yitzhak, but he also had something special. Like, whatever it means, you know, they say that the Hashem has some likeness of Yaakov carved on his throne. It's not clear what that means. There's something interesting about Yaakov, that he was, in a sense, distilled from the other stock, right? Because, you know, you had Avram, and then you had Yitzhak and Yishmael, and Yaakov and Esau, and then Yaakov had all of his sons righteous. He had 12 disciples. In fact, you could maybe say 13 if you say Menashe and Ephraim. He had 12 disciples, in a sense, all whom are righteous and could carry this light forward throughout the generations. You know, and among which you obviously had Yosef, and that paved the way for Pralka Gifkot and Moshe Rabbeinu and everything like that. So Yaakov, in a sense, you know, started a lot of this. He had his children. He had the 12 Shvatim to whom he passed down his knowledge. And therefore, his light allowed the beginning of the Jewish people as a nation that would continue to be able to pass down the light through the generations. Now, this light obviously got buried and got a little bit darkened in Mitzrayim and had to be rediscovered and re-illuminated, so to speak, and that's symbolized by the burning bush and other circumstances, but basically that wound up manifesting itself back into Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, then Moshe Rabbeinu didn't keep it to himself. He was all about turning it around, putting it upon him to other people. So he passed it to Yeshua, and Yeshua passed it to others. And the chain continues to this day. And the concept of teaching, and not just learning, but teaching, and the concept of chavrusas, the concept of Rebbe and Talmud, whatever it is one of the most fundamental and quintessential pieces of Judaism. That's also true even, you know, mothers and daughters teaching them. But certainly there's an element of passing down what you've learned from one generation to another and, you know, making sure the chain isn't broken. Once again, I want to thank my good friend Isaac Kotlicki for helping to fill in some missing gaps and wishing you all an amazing Shabbat Shalom.